This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is June 17th, 1983, and the interview is taking place in Yakima, Washington, and is being conducted by Janet Rasmussen. Tell me your full name.
Hans Johann Frederick Paul.
Okay.
That's a long name.
It's a long name. And you spell your last name?
F-A-H-L.
Were some of those names...
It was a given name to my grandfather at one time. I understood the name was Abramson originally, and then he was a sailor. And sometime they gave those names to individuals. Like lots of soldiers, they got a different name from, I don't know just where they got that fall from, but and that's how they got it anyways.
Mm-hmm. Were any of your other names, like the Joachim, is that a family name, a name that's gone down in your family?
Yes, that's in the family, yes. Uh-huh. I have a brother and two sisters in Sweden. And the brother and the sister, one of the sisters, they've been here visiting with me several times.
Mm-hmm.
So they are quite acquainted with the Yakima country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the son, he has two sons. I mean, my brother, he has two sons, and they're both doctors. One doctor, he married another doctor, that is, he married a dentist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and then he had a daughter, and she married a doctor who is a brain specialist in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, on that side, it's kind of a medical family.
Right. Mr. Fall, when were you born?
I was born in Karlskrona. If you know how to spell Karlskrona.
You spell it for me.
You know, K-A-R-L-S-K-R-O-N-A.
Okay. Karlskrona, and which part of Sweden is that?
That is in the province of Blekinge.
Mm-hmm. That's in the province of Blekinge, which is in southeastern Sweden.
What?
Southeastern Sweden.
Yes, it's southeastern Sweden, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
What was
and
your...
And that was November 28th, 1901.
Yeah. So... You are 82.
Yes, that's right.
82 years old.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. You were born in town.
I was born in the city. Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What did your father do?
Well, he was a sort of a comptroller or something in the navy, in the navy yard. You see, the city of Karlskrona is a naval base. And they have a large shipyard there. And he was an office holder of some kind. I don't know just what. I was considered as a comptroller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did he do that for his entire life?
And he was there until he eventually retired, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Dead and gone now.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
His name was Frederick Paul.
Mm-hmm. Frederick Paul.
Yes.
And your mother's name?
And the mother's name.
Yeah.
Her maiden name was Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she got to be a Paul.
Yes. Yes. What was her first name?
Her name was, let me see now, Axelina.
Axelina.
Axelina. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And They were born way back in 1870 someplace, 72 and 73.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did they both grow up in Karlskrona?
What?
Did your parents both
grow up in
Karlskrona?
Yes, they were both born in Karlskrona.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let me see now. Oh, you're still on the family.
Yes,
deal.
Right. Tell me something about Karlskrona when you were growing up.
Well, Karlskrona is a city built on islands, so there's a lot of ridges in between. And there was a man that owned the island, the original island, and his name was Vitus Andersson. And eventually, when King Karl the 11th came to establish the city of Karlskrona, that's how the name comes, Karls, and that was the crown of his work,
mm-hmm.
Krona.
Mm-hmm.
So he took over this island, and he put a shipyard in there, and forced people in to inhabit this, so to make a city. And this navy yard, they had a stone wall all around it. It's a very high one, and as I understood it, it was all built by Russian prisoners, war prisoners, and they go through the whole part of the city, so that shoreline is all clear, where they have their docks and all their equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the city grew, of course, so they built churches. And then there was quite an influx of German people coming in, so that they had also a large German Lutheran church there.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it is now taken over by the state church, it's still always referred to the German church.
Mm-hmm. How large was your family? How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have a wife here.
Yes, but in Sweden, how large was your family?
Oh,
how many
the family,
brothers and
it was
sisters?
Two boys and two girls.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me the names of your brothers and sisters?
Yeah, my brother's name is Wilhelm,
mm-hmm.
and he is a music director. Presently, he is organist in the Cathedral of Linköping.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And he's been here several times, and I have a sister. Her name is Svea, and she lives in Malmö. And then the other sister's name is Lily, and she lives in it's a farm just north of Karlskrona.
Mm-hmm. Were you the oldest child?
What?
Were you the oldest child?
I was the oldest one.
Mm-hmm.
I am immigrated to the United States,
mm-hmm. yes.
And that was 60 years ago.
60 years ago you came over.
Yeah, and I recall so vividly, it was a frosty morning, it was little frost on the ground as we left, and as we came further west, well, it got warmer and warmer, and of course coming to Yakima, it was just all spring here, and I thought it was just a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Had you planned from the very beginning to come to Yakima?
I had yes. I had an aunt that lived here.
An aunt?
An aunt.
Uh-huh.
And so she wanted me to come here, and so I stayed with them. And
what was your aunt's name?
Her name was Paul Christ. No relation to the Paul, but it just happened to be the name.
Was this your mother or your father's sister? Your aunt? Which side of the family
was
it?
They had a fruit orchard here.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course, as they died, I took over the operation out.
Oh, so this is how you got into the orchard business, was from your aunt
and
her husband.
Yes, that's right.
Was this your mother or your father's sister? Your aunt Falquist, was that your
her maiden name was Alter Carlton. She was a sister to my mother.
I see. When had she come over to the United States? When did your aunt come over?
Oh, she came over in about 1890.
Was she married at the time?
No, she was not married at the time. But she met this man in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Do you know why she wanted to come to the States? Do you know why your aunt wanted to leave Sweden? Did she ever tell you that?
Well, she didn't say much about... she just came here to this country and... she worked as a kind of a well, I don't know what you would call it. She was a lady in waiting for a judge out in Minnesota, and she traveled with them wherever they went, and went to Massachusetts, where they had their summer home. At Martha's Vineyard. And that's about all I could tell about her.
She came all on her own then. Was she the only one in the family who came to
She
America?
Was the only one of her family that came. And I was only out of my family that came. So... that's how it happened.
How did your parents feel about your leaving?
Well, they just didn't feel too good about it because they always lamented the idea, why should he go so far away? We can't get to see him too often. Well, of course, I came over twice, so they had a chance to visit with me. Yeah.
What do you remember about the day you left Karlskrona? What do you remember about the day you left Karlskrona?
Well, as I went to the train, they gave me a lot of flowers and stuff to wish me bon voyage. And I said to them, I said, my God, this is my own funeral. I had a lot of friends there, so it was a hard thing to come over here and not knowing the language at all, more than just a few phrases that I had for emergency that I could use in traveling. When we came, I came on the motor ship Stockholm, and there was one incident on that trip which I never forget, and it happened to be the anniversary of the sinking of Titanic, and we came to the very spot where this Titanic sank. And the ship stopped there for 20 minutes. They pulled in, when you just stop and just drift right there. And they had a beautiful memorial service for those 1,500 people that disappeared in the water, and then they threw a big wreath of flowers down in the ocean there. And I never forget that. That was really, it was the, I think, the 11th anniversary of the sinking of Titanic. And also I noticed that a day or so before, why, somebody said, there's an iceberg over there. And, you know, the temperature just went down to 32 degrees. It had been up in the 50s and 60s. And an iceberg was so far away that you, well, you could see it way back, you know, further than that hill is now. And that showed you how hard it cooled the temperature.
You were traveling all by yourself.
I was traveling all by myself. I just stuck out. I wanted to see what it looked like on the other side of the horizon. And of course, every time you came to the horizon, there wasn't another horizon. So when I got here, I of course was very much impressed with the climate, and that made me stay.
Had you had intended to settle in the United States? It was your intention to stay here,
yes,
in the United States.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But you didn't know whether you would stay in Yakima.
No, whether I would stay in Yakima or not. However, I did within just a few days after I got here, I applied for my first application for citizen papers. You have to take, and that takes you 5 years before you can get your citizenship. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I came to the judge, he asked me my name. Well, he said, here's your chance, you can cut out all those extra names. Well, I said, I was baptized, so they'll stay. So he respected me for respecting my parents, what they had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't use these names here, I only use the first name.
Mm-hmm. They still are part of your legal name.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back just a little bit,
okay,
to your childhood, because I want you to tell me about your schooling and what you did after you finished school.
Well, I went to the regular school, and I went to something similar to what we call high school here. And then I went into the Navy, and I was in there until the time when I left for America.
Mm-hmm. Were you stationed all the time in Karlskrona?
I was stationed all the time in Karlskrona, yes. And I was a torpedo man at the particular time. That is, during the years when I was there, and that's when I left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I just wonder, maybe I've been better off being a retired torpedo man now than to be still struggling along as a farmer. Yeah.
Is there anything special you remember from your home life in Sweden that you'd like to tell about?
Well, my dad was a singer, and he sang in a church choir for 50 years. And of course, I was always with them whenever they had concerts. I was the one that sold the tickets and took the tickets in and handled that side of it. I was grown up in the church that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went to church every Sunday, and I, of course, that was customary, I would go along with him. And then I was also interested in at that time I was just young, you see, so I was interested in the young people's work within the church, and I don't regret that, because by the time I could leave, or did leave, they sprung a nice big party on me, and they presented me with a Swedish flag, that is an ornamental deal,
mm-hmm.
On a silver pole.
Have you kept that all these years?
And I still have it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's by polishing it, you know, it get to be kind of worn. But then when I went back to Sweden, I had a cousin who was a flag maker in the Navy, and she made me a new set of Swedish flags because the original began to fade out. So I had that and continued to have it.
What sorts of things did you bring with you to America? You mentioned the flags. Were there other things that you brought along?
Well, I just didn't bring too much with me. On my trip back, then I remember I did have something that I thought I would cherish. So I brought a full set of cabinet or carpenter's tools with me here. So that was almost a suitcase, a trunk full by itself.
Mm-hmm. These were carpenter tools that were in your family?
Oh, that?
Were these family heirlooms?
They were things that I have had in the Navy, but they were stored at home after I got through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I just brought them all here and used them a few times. It was a memory from days gone by.
Mm-hmm. 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 Right. You've talked a little bit about the ship coming over.
Yes.
What happened when you landed in the United States?
Well, when we landed here, we got into Castle Garden in New York. And then we were ordered in alphabetically in the different sections of this big building. And then they checked our passports and then checked if we had any money. And I remember when I arrived in Yakima, I had my ticket paid for and I had $65 left. And I still got the $65.
You still got that, right?
Yeah. Not exactly the same.
No, but... Yeah. Now, you didn't know any English, you said?
I didn't know any English, no.
So how did you get along traveling by yourself from New York?
Well, I went to a library and got hold of an English-Swedish dictionary. And the most phrases that you need for traveling was to be found in it. So I took and copied them off, and by writing all that stuff down, it imprinted on me much more, so that right now I write pretty good English.
Mm-hmm. So you had those phrases with you?
Yeah, and I had that with me, so I just faced that thing in the... It was a phrase I wanted to say. I just read that thing over, and then it was also how to pronounce it, see?
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to pronounce it just about as close as that. And I didn't have any difficulty at all because I traveled on a train to Chicago just by sitting up, and then from Chicago and on to Yakima I had a sleeper. So I went to the restaurant in a train car. Well, I just checked my list over what kind of food I thought I wanted, so I just ordered just that. And I didn't say much more than just the order, and the nigger, he took the order and came up with it, and he said, "Well, that's all." And I didn't say anything, so nobody knew anything about me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And you could pay? You didn't have trouble with the money?
No, he put a slip on, I just paid him up, and that was it. So that's how it happened.
Was anyone here to meet you when you arrived in Yakima? Were you met at the train station in Yakima?
Yeah, I was met there. Yes, my aunt and her husband, they came and met me at the train, so they knew what time I could be coming. It took us, it seems like it took 4 days from New York to Yakima at that time, continuous traveling.
Were there things that surprised you about the country when you saw it? Were there things that surprised you about the country when you got over here?
It surprised me over the immenseness of it, you know. Travel days and nights and still traveling. And out there it was, probably beginning to springtime. And as we came out, the further west we came, the warmer it got. Came to Spokane, and boy, I thought it was a real summer compared to the Swedish climate. So, and I remember we came through the Montana, and there was a woman that just well dressed lady, and the train stopped on a just a very small place just to let people all went on, and golly, I sat there looking at that lady. She got off and she walked out in that dusty country, you know, and I thought, gee, Oilegans. But there she was, you know, and somebody came and met her. She hiked over, crossed over, by the depot there, and got somebody that took her in a coach. And I thought, gee, in such a godforsaken place, and somebody like that come walking out. It was just, I thought it was a really cowboy country.
So this was in 1923. Which year was this?
1923.
1923, and it
yes.
was in the spring. So
yes, It was in the spring. So
you said that you were very impressed with the climate here in Yakima,
yes.
In this area. Did it ever seem to be to you to be too hot?
Yes, I probably suffered from that heat because when I came here to this country, I had dark eyebrows. And for some reason or other, I just lost my eyebrows. I lost my hair. And then, of course, the hair came back again. That probably was one of the things that happened. But especially, I remember in 1926, it was a very hot summer. In those days, I worked out in a field for haying, and of course there was no shade. except your own shade. And the doctors, they couldn't figure out what happened there, that my eyebrows just fell off. Somebody, I came to a place and said, "Oh, look at him, he shaved his eyebrows off." And I had just lost them, you see what I mean? And they never came back. Well, there's a little fuss, you know.
Were you surprised by the different vegetation here?
The vegetation, yes, most so. Things grew so fast. You know, here we got in no time, it was strawberries, you know, and all kinds of different fruits that came to being. So of course, they said it was the volcanic ash that is the cause of the good vegetation here. And I seen that through the Mount Helen in when that thing blew over, why thing grew like like everything, you see.
How large an orchard did your aunt and her husband have at the time when you came?
They had 23 acres.
And what sorts of things were they growing?
And they were growing apples. Apples mostly. Then I planted pears in with them when they still lived. I continued. When the trees got to a certain age, I took the old trees out and I replanted. So my orchard right now is the second growth of apple trees.
Have you expanded the orchard in terms of number of acres over the years?
No, the acreage is the same, but the type of planting they're doing nowadays is a tighter type, so that you're growing more fruit on an acre, you see.
How did they do the picking and so on in those days? When you first came, how did they harvest the apples?
Well, it was harvested probably very much like they're doing right now. It's they just had to pick them and put them in boxes. However, those boxes were a 40-pound log, whereas now we have a huge crate, you know, that holds about 25 of those logs. And we handle it. It isn't quite so much handwork now as it was before you handle the boxes and stack them up. Whereas you have now a mechanized deal and lift the thing.
What sort of responsibilities did you have when you first started helping them? What sorts of jobs did you do for them? In the orchard.
Well, I just did general farm work.
Had you ever done any work like that before?
No, I'd never done anything, because being in the Navy, why, it's... I said, well, it's just like a Navy man get grounded on dry land.
Now, you grew up right on the sea.
Yes, that's right, right by the sea.
Just
like if you live in Seattle, you know, you have Elliott Bay and you have the sounds there. Well, so it was here. Well, I would probably compare Karlskrona with Bremerton. It was a city at that time about 28,000 people, and it has grown. It's something like 37,000 or 40,000 now.
Was the sea and the and the life on the water, was that something that you missed?
Well, yes, but the warm tail, you see, it was just so comfortable here all the time that just you forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, every now and then I took a trip over to Seattle, and it was just like coming home. You know, and you went out to these cities or towns like Ballard and those other places there, why you just felt like you were at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Now, you said that your aunt's married name was Falquist.
Yes, that's right.
What was her first name?
Kirstine.
And her husband's name?
Was Anton.
Anton.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Were they the only Swedes in the area?
No. They were all Covenant people that lived out there. I was the only Lutheran out in the whole community at the time.
Now, which community are we talking about?
Sela.
Sela, north of Yakima.
Yes,
Sela. Uh-huh, mm-hmm.
Yes, uh-huh. And he was born in Hammerdal, Sweden. That is just above Östersund someplace.
This is Anton.
It's up in the northern part of Sweden.
Uh-huh. This is Anton now you're telling about.
That's my aunt's husband.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she was born in Karlskrona.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were saying that at one time there were quite a few Swedes in Sela.
Yes.
What happened to them? How did they come over here, and what happened to them?
Well, there was a minister at that time in St. Paul. And he got interested in real estate, and he found out about there was land for sale out west, and he went to investigate it, and he bought a certain block of land there, and so he came back to his parishioners and said, "Well, here's the future for you." So they all grabbed them, they all bought 5 acres apiece, and then they moved out here, and the hills they bought, it was just something like that dry hill you see there, and then they grabbed the sagebrush out there, and then they planted trees.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when this was about? What date, what time we're talking about?
That was 1910.
Mm-hmm.
When that territory got settled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was this true of your aunt's husband too? Was he part of that group?
Yeah, they moved out.
In that same group?
Yes, they're in the same group.
Do you know what that minister's name was who came out? You're telling about?
Well, he came out probably, I would say he probably came out about 1908 and started to investigate the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then these people were all belonging to the Covenant Church in St. Paul, and they all moved out here, and then they formed the Covenant Church out there in Sela. And they were the mainstays, they were the mayor, and they were the cop, and they were everything in town. And now, of course, people moved in, other people, so that the Swedish influx in Sela is just a part of history.
Mm-hmm. At the time when you arrived in the early 20s,
yes.
What, could you speak Swedish in Sela? Could you use Swedish?
Yes, they had Swedish in their church at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I I attended that to hear the Swedish. And the people, any place you went to, you could go to the grocery store, you bought anything, you just, there was a Swedish clerk there or owner, and you could just buy everything in Swedish.
Mm-hmm. What about a newspaper? Do you know if they had their own newspaper?
Well, in those days, they had a spokesman review from Spokane, and then eventually the Yakima Herald became to being more popular, and then we got into that.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't have any newspaper in Swedish.
No, no Swedish paper in the community. No.
How many people do you think we're talking about that came out from Minnesota? Just a guess.
Well, it must have been at least 100.
Mm-hmm.
Because they formed a congregation, mm-hmm. and they supported it. So then, of course, they had children, you know, and it grew.
Did you ever subscribe to any Swedish papers or read any books?
I subscribed to a Swedish paper from Chicago at the time. They called it I forgot the name of it now, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a Chicago paper that came every once a week. So I kept news of what's happening in Sweden and what happened in America, of course. So Svenska Amerikaner Tribune was the name of the paper.
Did you have an opportunity to travel around
yes.
the country?
Yes. In Sweden, you mean?
No, I was thinking of here, but tell me about Sweden
sure.
also. Yeah.
Yes, I had quite a lot of opportunities, being that I was affiliated with the Lutheran Church. I got to be a delegate many, many times, and I traveled up to just last week, I was a delegate to a conclave in Spokane. So I've been in quite a few places just on church business, as far east as North Carolina.
Which congregation have you belonged to here?
Here I belong to the Central Lutheran.
Did your aunt and uncle have any children?
No, they did not. That's why they wanted me here. So I became a part of the family eventually.
When did you meet your wife?
I met her 40 years ago anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I met her a long time ago. She was married at the time when I met her, and then her husband died. And then I married her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it.
Uh-huh. What tell me her name. Tell me your wife's name.
Her Her name was Ruth.
Ruth, and what was her maiden name, her family name?
Her maiden name was Erickson.
Erickson.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And her first husband's name was?
Her first husband's name was Johnson.
Johnson. So she was Erickson Johnson and became Fall.
Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh. Was your wife born here in Yakima?
No, she was born in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Did her parents come from the old country?
Her parents came from the old country. Yes.
Did you ever meet them?
A few years back, I took my wife over to see Sweden, and then we located some of her relatives. At one place we called up, we had an old telephone number that from an old letter that she had gotten, and the operator didn't know that didn't exist anymore. So he said, well, I'm going to try to trace it for you. So she traced it and found out what that number presently was. And we got in touch with this party, and of course she thought we didn't know any Swedish. So they had to get an interpreter home. And my wife had gone to Swedish school out in Wisconsin for 14 days, and she rivaled Swedish just as good as anybody, you know. And that was on her father's side we met them. Then on her mother's side, they came from Östersund. Mm-hmm. So then we went way up there, and then she met cousins. Of course, some of those cousins, they remember her mother, and they told a story about her mother going to America and all that. And we visited that church, which is
You were telling about the church up in northern Norway. What was the name
Northern
of that church?
Sweden.
Or Northern Sweden, excuse me.
It's the Hakos Church. And that church was built in, you see, in the olden days, Sweden was a Catholic country. And then after Martin Luther comes in, then it turned to be a Lutheran. So the churches were left as they had been in the Catholic, and the walls or the churches were just painted with all kinds of biblical pictures and scriptures. And this church had that, and the altar or the pulpit, it was just gold embroidered all around on the outside of it.
Tell me the name of the church again.
Hakos.
Hakos. Could you spell Hakos that?
Hakos Church.
Could you spell that? Can you spell
it? Yes. Hakos.
Hakos.
You put a ring over the A.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
You put the circle, the dots over there. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
To make that. So that you did get a trip back with your wife to Sweden. Did you speak Swedish at all with her at home? Your wife?
No, we don't speak Swedish at all.
No?
We don't use any Swedish. It goes fine.
Tell me about your own family, your children.
We don't have any children.
You don't have any children?
No, she had two children in her first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a son and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And the son, he's the vice president of the Seattle First National Bank.
What is his name?
His name is Johnson. Merlin Johnson.
What's his first name?
Merlin.
Merlin?
Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the daughter's name is Andre.
Mm-hmm.
And she is married to a retired Navy officer. And they live in Seattle also.
And what's her last name?
Hester. Hester. H-E-S-T-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
How old were the children when you married your wife?
Well, they were married.
They were older.
Mm-hmm. They were all, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
They were, I don't remember the age, mm-hmm. but they were married and had their own children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when I married her, I became a grandfather right out of the bat.
That was pretty good doing.
Sure.
How long have you been married?
23 years.
Let me see. You said that you became a citizen as quickly as you could.
You
became a citizen right away?
Yes, I became a citizen right away.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I had been here for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the time when Coolidge was president.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago.
Did you notice the depression and some of those difficult years in your business? Was that a problem for you?
Well, I don't know, except probably a little bit lonesomeness sometimes. You would get, you would feel kind of like you were lost someplace.
Mm-hmm. 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 How many days a week did you have to work out in the farm?
I worked there 4 weeks. Except Sunday,
Sunday.
I mean the week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Did the hard years in the 30s with the big depression, the Great Depression, did that affect your work?
Well, yes, it affected us that we didn't earn much.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the food prices were low, the wages would be low.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for some other people, neighbors out there too. Think of the depression. The only time I remember the depression was when it was in March 1933 when Roosevelt decided to call it he froze everything. And I said, gee whiz, you know, you wouldn't get anything for your Swedish money if you invested in it over there, because when they froze it, right? So I remember it was that day that the bank was closed, and it was just that one day. In Seattle, they had a bank, and that was owned by a Swede. And he closed in the morning, But in the afternoon, he opened up again, the business was as usual. People had confidence in him, so they went and cast the checks and deposited what they needed to do and kept what they wanted to. And that bank has held throughout the whole time. So there was no bank failures in as far as the community of Selah concerns.
You mentioned that you were involved very much with your church. Were there other groups that you, community groups or other organizations that you got involved with?
Well, I was very much active in the Yakima County Farm Bureau. Where I served as treasurer for a number of years. And I am also active, I am a 32nd degree Mason. So I'm active in the Masonic things, you know. And that's about as far as outside of church that I had.
Tell me the dates of your trips back to Sweden. When did you go back exactly?
Well, my first trip, I went back on a Polish ship, and that was in 1936. And I celebrated 1936 Christmas in Sweden. And I stayed there till, well, I was gone about 3 months anyways. And it was an interesting deal to go on a different line from the first one I had. And then the next time, in 1965, I took my wife over to Sweden. And then we flew over, and that took us. On the first trip, when we went by boat, it took us 11 days, and this here took us 11 hours from Seattle. So there was a difference in the way of traveling. And both times we celebrated Christmas in Sweden, and that's a people say, why do you go in at a cold time of the year? Well, you can find people at home. In the summertime, people go on a vacation, and if they're gone, they're just gone. And you come to the door, you're left out. Because they don't wait for anybody. When their vacation comes, they just go. And so we enjoyed the Christmas celebration very much, and there were several mementos we took with us that you don't get any except at the Christmas time in the stores.
For example?
Well, now for instance, the decorations of the Christmas trees, different type of flags and that's another thing that they had. As we travel along Sweden by train, and we're looking out through the windows, and there was a star, and there was a light in the star, and it was lit in every window we could see. And so Ruth says, why don't you go and get one of those things? So I went to a store and we found one, and every year, Christmas time, we hang it up. And everybody just thinks that's just wonderful. Well, somebody thought, oh, you got the Eastern Star. Well, yeah, that's an Eastern Star, you know, but not that what they were thinking of, you know.
Right.
So, And then there was a man that made an old-time Christmas tree that they have, that they used to have in Sweden before the time of the green trees. And it's a deal about like this big. It took the whole suitcase just to put it into, you know, in pieces. And then I put it together. Mm-hmm. Every Christmas I set it up. And it's a real nice ornament. And that dates, the custom of it dates back to way back in the middle centuries. So, we got things like that,
right,
which you wouldn't at all thought of in the summertime.
No, right. Are there ways in which you still use your Swedish now, your language? Are there ways you use your Swedish language still today?
Yeah, we use it when we traveled.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We talked English between ourselves, but I mean, when I got to see somebody that I had to, I spoke Swedish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it takes a little while to change over, just to get it fluently, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you use it at all here in this
I don't
country?
Use it here at all,
no.
No.
What has it meant to you to be a Swede? What has it meant to you to be Swedish?
I don't know if it has meant much of anything. It's just that, well, I'm just an immigrant, that's all.
Can you say something for me in Swedish for the tape?
Yes, I can do a little bit of the middle.
Okay.
The Jakoma Dalen är ett vackert klimat, ett vackert en vacker plats att bo i. Den har ett behagligt klimat året runt. Den har snö på vintern och den har sommar på sommaren. Jag vet inte om jag ska säga någonting mer, jag ska säga. Fruktträden, det är när jag först såg fruktträden här. Och de var alla in the vid blomsterskrud. Där tänkte jag, det var liksom i paradiset. Så det är ungefär allt vi kan säga om att jag kommer.
Ja, tack. Tack, många tack. Okay, you tell me anything more you want to add
on
here.
When I first came to the bank, I was going to cash some money I had, you know. And as custom in Sweden, you always take your hat off when you come to the bank. So I took my hat off and laid it on the side and I'm going to cash this check there. And the cashier says, hey, he says, it's high to the ceiling here. Keep your hat on. And I never forget that. but that was a custom in Sweden. You always take your hat off when you come up to the teller, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing I remember. I don't know of anything I'm using right now that I could. Well.
Okay. Well, we'll say thank you very much for taking.